Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you do the podcast thing. We appreciate you joining us. Remember, rate us, review us. We'd appreciate 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm going to be inclined to think that you're just a hater. Coming up, we have got T.O. and how the NFL or the Hall of Fame, rather, is getting it wrong, and he might be getting it wronger. We'll laugh at your man, Papa John. Ha, ha, ha. But first, the World Cup has ended. Congratulations to what they call them, La France. France, they went out here and they got it. And I felt like if you watch the match, by the way, that's what they call it, by the way. They call it a match. If you have watched the match, one thing I think that you could notice about that, even if you were not a big soccer fan, which I am not, you could tell that that was one of those situations where the team that wasn't as good probably gave it all it had to give early, and they probably needed to have a lead coming out of that. Instead, they wound up going down 2-0. They don't say zero. They say nil. He went down 2-0, and the two came with France having all of one shot on goal. And that one shot on goal was not actually a goal, man. The poor dude from Croatia, he messed around and hit a ball off his head. It went into the wrong goal, kind of like what your man from Coming to America was talking about, where they bounced that ball off their heads. So that one happened. And then there was the one on the penalty kick, because the dude got the handball in the box, and it looked like he wasn't even really trying to do that, but you know, that's how it works out. And boom, they were down 2-0. Croatia made, you know, they tried to do a little bit more, but they could not really get down, and so that meant La France won the World Cup. Now, you know, people like to like jump up and decide who it is that they're gonna root for during the World Cup. And I had decided that if anybody asked me who I was rooting for in the World Cup, just to see what their reaction was gonna be, I was gonna hit them with that Issa Rae and be like, I'm rooting for everyone black. Now, I ain't gonna lie, I typically don't necessarily take that approach because I dislike people of all persuasions. But, yeah, I was like, okay, we'll ride out with that one. Like, I think a lot of people, they won't necessarily be honest with you about it, but a lot of their rooting interest when it comes down to games like this is based on their understanding of history and geopolitics. It's how it goes down. I ain't really got no beef with Croatia. I ain't really got no beef with France. I don't know. You know, I guess France would have been the one to root for if I had a tiebreaker. I looked up on that screen, though, and I was like, hey, man, I went to France a couple years ago, and I'm not saying I didn't see any black people, because I saw some black people, but their soccer team is absolutely not representative of like the larger population. Their soccer team is looking like an analog to USA basketball. Like, no, don't get this twisted. Don't get out here thinking that 85% of America is black just because this basketball team is. No, 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 no. It's a lot more shooters out here than they are dunkers. That's how that works out. But it became a thing with France, right? Because a lot of those gentlemen who play for France are immigrants. They are people from other countries, or their parents were from different countries. So I believe we got the stats here that 80% of the team is African. 50% of the team is Muslims. And that's a big thing in France because they have a serious, like, schism, as they call it, on religion there. And, you know, it ties into, like, the larger world of what's going on everywhere, basically. And I understand a lot of y'all want to play this stick to sports game. But let me tell you something about the stick to sports as it relates to soccer that I find to be interesting. Now, Gabe, you're a bit of a soccer fan, right?
I am.
Now, you correct me if I'm wrong here, but especially with European soccer, it's a lot harder to play the stick to sports game if it's just because, like, the nature of what ownership of soccer teams is. You got, like, soccer teams that are owned by unions and stuff like that.
You do have, like, I know in Russia I heard that some soccer teams are owned, like, by the state.
Yeah. It's hard. Like, soccer doesn't allow you to do that. And I thought that you saw a decent level of demonstration at different points of the World Cup. The Albanian cats that were doing the thing with the flag, with the hands on the field and stuff like that. And that was a big thing. We just don't know so much about it because that's not necessarily where it is that we are from. But it's not so easy to do. And, Gabe, you let me know if I'm wrong here on this one. I feel like it's very difficult to play any stick-to-sports game. World Cup finals in Russia on Sunday. President of the United States going to meet with the president of Russia on Monday. I don't know if you've been reading the news, but our Russian brothers, you know, they seem to have some involvements in American politics, perhaps. It's kind of hard to separate, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. I mean, especially when you have the World Cup happening in Russia, there was certainly quite a bit of concern when they won the bid about even just the safety of people visiting the country. I mean, I would say that overall, it seems like everything went relatively well just in terms of like people's safety. But I mean, you saw, like we're going to talk about in the final, there's a little bit of demonstration that happened in the middle of the game.
Yeah, like this is what it is, man. And it's interesting because the world seemed to keep on spinning. You know, like, I don't feel like the World Cup all of a sudden burns and everybody's like, oh my goodness, how dare we have, you know, how dare you bring this into our sanctuary, whatever it is. The World Cup's the world. They seem to be a little better able to handle what some of these things are, but it almost feels dishonest to cover the World Cup in this way. Here's something that I think is interesting, and this is something that I think we got to consider when we like play this whole stick to sports game. First of all, shout out to the good folks at Fox. They had the contract for the World Cup stuff. As much as it was bad for business that the United States was not in the World Cup, it was probably a lot easier for the guys that had to produce and put stuff together that the United States was not at the World Cup. Can you imagine if we would have had a U.S.-Russia knockout round game? Or if somehow they'd wound up in the draw in the same group? Can you imagine what they would have been? That would have been how terribly awkward that would have been for the guys in the broadcast booth as they had to try to talk about those things. But one thing that seems very clear that the decision has been made is that once somebody gets the contract that they're going to host the Olympics, the World Cup, or any one of these events, then we're not going to talk about anything uncomfortable about your country. Now, let's go back in, not even time, but let's just look back a little bit. 2008, you had the Olympics in China. You didn't really see a lot of critical, like, journalism surrounding the Olympics in China. Of course, they do everything they can to dress it up and make everything look as cool as it can. Like, I remember during China, you would see these pictures of, like, what it looked like a couple blocks away from some of the venues, and it was not the same. The Russians, they hosted the Olympics in Sochi in 2014, and now they are hosting these, I mean, they hosted this World Cup. The World Cup's in the world, man. And we've just decided on all of these things that we're not going to pay any attention whatsoever as to what's going on. And what I find to be wild about that is that for so long, one of the draws of watching international competition on television was the geopolitical stuff. You know, like the Olympics of the Cold War, a lot of this was about that. Like, that was a running theme. The whole Miracle on Ice thing about beating the Soviet Union in 1980. You are crazy if you think that that was only about how good the Soviet Union was. No, they were also the Soviet Union, and this was also the United States. Now, that's almost 40 years ago now, where we've decided we're going to divorce ourselves from all of those things. But man, what winds up happening when you do that, and what I think is interesting, you just wind up doing a commercial for whatever country this happens to be. Like, that's all it becomes. It becomes basically like a pamphlet, something that you put in the mail to try to get people to buy vacation packages. That is what it is. And so much of the texture of what's going on gets lost because we have just decided as an industry, nope, we're not going to talk about anything that might make anybody just a little bit uncomfortable. It's not how we're going to play it. That's not what we're going to do. And so what we then wound up with was a really rich story, I think, about what was or wasn't going on while, you know, over in Russia the day before one of the biggest meetings of heads of state that any of us can remember. But we skipped it. We just skipped it all. Now, the people that do want to talk about geopolitics as it relates to the World Cup are the people who want to jump on about our friends, the French, and all of their people of African descent on the team. And see, the argument that people are there making about that is like, see what immigrants do for you, right? Like, that's the thing, you know, to tie into the current debate in the United States. And see, that's where it gets to be uncomfortable, because people really think that they're offering some sort of like really progressive view when they say that one. And I look at it and I'm like, oh, okay. So basically your argument for being humane toward immigrants is simply what you believe these immigrants can do for you. And I guess that to a degree, that's the argument behind all immigration laws, except, you know, this country is always like asylum and stuff like that. Like, there's a different ethos that's been there at its root. But I just don't feel like the look, if we got us some immigrants, maybe we could win at soccer. Gabe, I don't feel like that's like the most heartwarming argument to support what these people are trying to say.
These are the same people that say if Westbrook was a soccer player, he'd be the best soccer player in the world.
Yes.
You know, we could have a real good team because we're super diverse in the U.S.
Right.
It's like, okay, so you can equate to, you know.
But I also feel like these people are basically saying like, hey, man, How do you know that that baby you snatched away from our parents wasn't going to be good at soccer one day? Right? That's what it feels like those people are saying while they think they're making some like deep geopolitical statement. The composition of France's World Cup team isn't going to change a damn thing in that country. No more. I think I saw somebody said on Twitter, it ain't going to change nothing in France. No more than the Super Bowl champions change race relations in the United States. Like, that's not really how it works. There's no real metaphor or parable that you're going to take from the composition of the French team. What you take from that is, in order to win athletic competitions, people are willing to make levels of compromise that they might not be willing to make in other ways. All those European teams stay having some ringer of some sort. They stay, I mean, this has been the case for the longest. You are going to have people from French West Africa who are going to play for the French soccer team always, in part, and I think the saddest part of this, really, in the part that gets lost, those dudes are going to France because African soccer is so institutionally underdeveloped that they can't feel no level of confidence that their own home team will ever be good enough, so they go someplace where they might be able to win. Like, that is probably the disheartening part of it, is that after all of this, after everything that happened in Africa through history and time, the French even get their good soccer players from them. Right? This is not really like a heartwarming tale of what immigration can do for you. This is just the realities of what the world is. These cats are going to try to go places to get their best chance at winning, and countries are going to carefully sift through, in many cases, and take the folks that they think can help them out. That's what it's going to be. Don't try to take this into anything that is much deeper than that, because we had an opportunity to talk about some deep things when it came to the World Cup, and that was about the whole damn World Cup, and we decided to skip it. So I guess it's time, really, if you want to skip that one, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, with these soccer scouts that come from Europe to Africa to scout players, they're finding these kids sometimes, you know, in their early teens and just, all right, you're the best one. You're coming with me.
Yeah.
I'm not very comfortable with how that sounds.
No, as much as I dislike the idea of the way in America that we wed like youth sports to education in the way that we do, and you know, and it winds up devaluing education in the process, I'm also not cool on taking an 11-year-old and being like, your path is now charted.
Yeah, exactly. You're setting up the rest of their life for them.
Yes. Yes. Not comfortable with that either. But like I say, man, we had our chance to go deep on this. If we wanted to go deep on the World Cup, there was ample opportunity to do so. We're not going to do it late and come on the back end with the French. And yes, by the way, just because I can't pass up this opportunity while we have a game, shout out to the Pussy Riot. Pussy Riot ran on the field. They were dressed up like police officers. And I admit, I was very curious as to why it was security didn't pile drive them until I looked and saw, well, that would be a violation of social decorum if you pile drove at least one of the people that I saw that got hemmed up. And they ran out there on some like protesting Putin thing. Like that was their thing. They've been doing this for a very, very long time. And they went out there and they did that. And I saw the AP report about, you know, Pussy Riot claiming responsibility for it. Gabe, did you hear anything in the broadcast about them saying who the streakers were?
No, I didn't. Which is why, yeah, exactly. I didn't know anything till after the fact, but I did find it interesting though that like there was a streaker during the Super Bowl last year, but none of us saw it on the broadcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that made it on the broadcast. Like, it was very clear, and I saw everybody was like, oh, what's going on? What's going on? And it's like, oh, wow, we have some people on the field making a demonstration, and there was nothing that they could do about it.
But there was no follow-up in the name of news value. No siree, Bob. Keep this moving, which I guess we'll also do with the podcast. All right, so your man T.O., I asked Gabe before if we had talked about T.O. and this Hall of Fame thing. I hate to admit that the level of fascination that I have developed for this T.O. story, and I don't even necessarily know if like full-on fascination is the best way to put it, but I do find this to be interesting because I feel like everybody is right and everybody is wrong. I don't think there's a sympathetic figure on either side in a battle between the Pro Football Hall of Fame and Terrell Owens. The Hall of Fame voters, I would say, were largely wrong on how long they made Terrell Owens wait. Now, the counter argument to be made is, like, Chris Carter had to wait 6 years to get into the Hall of Fame, and Chris Carter retired number 2 in catches and touchdowns when he retired. And he had to wait something like 6 years in order to get into the Hall of Fame. Marvin Harrison, I believe, had to wait something like 3 years before he got into the Hall of Fame. It's not that crazy, the idea that T.O. would have to wait, if for no other reason than just the voting structure of the Hall of Fame, where they got a limited number of people that can get in. There's so many people that are eligible. It's so often that there's a backlog, to the point where I found it shocking that T.O. actually made it in this year, given that this is quite possibly the strongest Hall of Fame class of all time. I mean, we got Randy Moss, we got T.O., we got Ray Lewis, we got Brian Urlacher. I mean, that's a monster top four for your Hall of Fame. But at the same time, I feel like that was confirmation that they were just being petty and keeping T.O. out. Because if T.O. could manage to make the Hall of Fame with this particular set of nominees, then how in the world is it that he couldn't make it in the Hall of Fame in some of those other years? Like, that became the fair question. They should not have made him wait that long. I think that had to do as much as anything else with a level of pettiness and how much the writers dislike T.O. They're wrong for that one. T.O. got into the Hall of Fame. T.O. then decided that rather than attending the Hall of Fame ceremony, that he was going to throw a party of his own, and that would be the way that he would want to celebrate his induction. He then decided to do this celebration at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. Now, I am not saying that T.O. is wrong for that simple decision. I would say, though, I talked a few years ago to a Hall of Famer the week that he was in Canton for the Hall of Fame. I needed to holler at him about something else, and I remember I felt so bad because I was calling him during his Hall of Fame week, and he's like, no, it's no big deal what you need. And so I was talking to him, and I've never heard purer joy from an athlete talking about anything related to his sport as I did hearing that Hall of Famer just talk about being there. I remember on the phone with him, he's like, I'm about to go to the Ray Nitschke luncheon. Like, he was so excited about the idea of doing this. And when you talk to guys that are in the Hall of Fame, just the level of pride that they have in being there, like, it really, really means something to them. That's part of why you're not going to hear any of these Hall of Famers, whether it's T.O. or any, I mean, Michael Irvin or anybody else, you're not going to hear any of them ride for T.O. because they take the Hall of Fame that seriously. It's that big of a thing to them. They love the idea of being in the Hall of Fame that much. And I just never... It's hard for me to believe that T.O. would not have been happier on that stage in Canton than he would be like playing off Broadway in Chattanooga. You know, how many people are really going to show up for that at the football stadium at Chattanooga, you know, in Chattanooga, for example? Like, it, so I wouldn't say that he was wrong for making the decision to, you know, to not go, but I just don't feel like that's going to be the thing that ultimately makes him happy. I do think there's something kind of wrong, though, about throwing like a counter event. Like no. If you decide you just want to do it like people do at the draft where they just, you know, have a fish fry or something like that at the crib, okay, go ahead and do that. But he seems to be trying to take this to another place. Like, he's trying to recreate a Hall of Fame induction without actually going to the Hall of Fame. And I think that one's a little bit wrong. But now the Hall of Fame, they didn't say that they're not even going to play a video for T.O. They're not even going to mention T.O., which, very, very petty. Very, very petty. And there is an argument that it makes them look bad because they feel like people feel like they are stooping to the same level. I get the argument that people are making there, and I do think in some ways that's what the Pro Football Hall of Fame is doing. That being said, I also think inadvertently the Pro Football Hall of Fame is going to be doing T.O. a favor. Here's why they're going to be doing T.O. a favor, because if T.O. doesn't show up to that bad boy and everybody knows that he basically big-timed the event, if he does not show up and they show a T.O. video, you are crazy if you don't think he's getting booed. All those people that show up and they out there in the grass and their folding chairs and everything else, they going to boo T.O. In 2018, you be watching the news, they are going to boo him if they do such a thing. It is probably best not to mention him at all. Again, they have one of the greatest Hall of Fame induction classes of all time. It shouldn't be a thing about T.O. if T.O. does not want to be there. But here's where I'm really down on T.O. Like, I thought about this yesterday, and I think that this is where I think that he needs to do some math within himself about what it is that he's doing. And if he's happy with what he's rolling with, then go ahead. But he doesn't want to be there for the induction ceremony? Okay, cool. Why do you even want to be in the Hall of Fame? Like, it's clear that you care about the Hall of Fame. It's clear that this is something that you wanted. So what are you doing?
I thought it would have been more vindicating for him to get there and be all, you could hate me now.
Yes.
Up in front of everybody after trying to keep him out of the hall for this many years and then him finally getting in. I thought it would have been sweeter to him to kind of rub that in everybody's face.
You would think, right? Like I mean, and I don't know if we'll ever know the depths of like what his feelings are, but you do care. So to me, if you're acting like the induction isn't a big deal, then you shouldn't have got measured for the coat because he got measured for the coat. You shouldn't have had them people like when it's for the bus. It's not like they just like take a picture and then make a bus. They come and they like, you know, grip up your head and do all that stuff, you know, and all those things. You didn't have to sit for that. So like what I don't get about this is you want to be in the Hall of Fame, but you just want to flip them the bird about the fact that they took you so long to get in there. If you don't care, dog, go all the way with not caring. Say that you will, are you down to be called a Hall of Famer? Like I was voted into the Hall of Fame, but then don't be in it. Except you do care. So like nobody's fooled by this. No one believes that you don't, you know, you don't want to be there. Nobody believes that you don't want any part of this. And the bottom line on it is nobody's hurt that he isn't showing up. Like I think that this is an easy time for a lot of writers and stuff like that to, you know, kind of lash out at him one last time. And I think that for a lot of the guys that are in the Hall of Fame, a lot of them don't like him and this is their chance to lash out at him. But in the end, they are not going to be up there and be like, damn, man, I really wish T.O. was here.
There's a really easy comp for this. It's like the Sweet 16. And some kid gets word that he's not going to be invited, so he pushes really, really hard to get that invite.
Yep.
And then he gets invited, and he's like, "Nah, forget y'all.
Yeah, I don't want to go.
I don't even want to be there."
Yeah.
And people aren't going to miss. People aren't going to miss him being there.
No one's going to notice that he is not there. Not a single person. Is he ever going to come back? Because look, those Hall of Fame dudes, they love to go back every single year. Like it's a thing for them in that way. Is T.O. ever going to go to the Hall of Fame? Right. Is he ever going to be the guy that shows up? Is anybody ever going to want him there? Like all of those things. I just don't see how any of this in the way that he's handling it is going to make him happy. And as much as I think that the Hall is being petty about this, I think they're in a much better position to move on after the fact than he is. So we're going to look at the Hall and we're going to be like, yo, y'all didn't have to do this. They're like, yeah, we did it. So what? And they're going to be done with it. But that weekend, T.O. is going to be talking about the Hall. The Hall is not going to be talking about T.O. And what T.O. seems to want as much as anything else is for people to talk about him, is for people to remember him, is for people to give him all the respect that he feels that he has been denied. And I don't blame him a bit. Respect is currency to me, too. I don't blame him a bit for wanting to get that respect for those people because he feels that he deserves that respect. I don't blame him. I get you. I see where you're coming from. I just don't see how any of your current behaviors are going to make you happy. I don't know what it is that's going to do it for him, but I'm telling you, that thing he does in Chattanooga is going to be over, and then Sunday's going to come. What's going to do it for you then, man? I hope you find something. Self Papa John. Your man Papa John. Is he even Papa John anymore? Because didn't Papa John's fire Papa John Gabe?
They did.
And you guys may have seen this where they had some meeting where they were trying to teach Papa John how to be less racist. It was a consulting firm. And they was like, look, we just don't want you to sound racist. And so they were talking to Papa John about how to avoid interacting with online racists. And Papa John's response was, Colonel Sanders called black people the N-word. What? Where did that come from? And understand, I said the N-word. He said the N-word, like not some cheeky reference to the N-word. He put it on the road, two G's in the middle. Yeah, he went ahead and he said that. Do you realize how bad it's got to be if as a consultant firm whose job it is to help you not sound racist? And please understand, any consultant firm whose job it is to come in and help people not sound so racist, you know what they hear a lot of when they go into those meetings? That's right, racist things. Because their whole point is to get people to stop that. And I imagine that ordinarily when they go in there to talk to people to get them to stop saying racist thing, somebody says a racist thing and they're like, okay, now let's talk about why you don't do that. Papa John came across so racist to them that he said one of those things and they just gave up. They're like, nah, we're not taking this job. Nah, too much work here. Too much work here. Like if my orthodontist was able to look at my grill and say, I think we can do something about it, then somebody shouldn't be like, for Papa John's race stuff to be worse than my grill used to be is telling. It is very, 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 very telling. My grill looked like somebody was doing something halfway between playing the piano and shuffling a deck of cards, and the man still came in there and tried. They heard Papa John talk about race, and they chucked the deuce. They were like, nah, no thank you. And then they got Papa John up out the paint as working for Papa John's, and then they got his name off all these different buildings. He actually personally has the naming rights at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. In Louisville, he actually has that. They decided they were going to take his name down. Then he went and did this like wild interview where he talked about how, what really happened on that call was simply that they were the ones that were trying to advance and advance racism. And Papa John was like, oh, no, that's not what I stand for. So apparently he was using, you know, like Colonel Sanders. It's like, I'm not Colonel Sanders, you know. Guess that was his plan. Then we also had this part where he talks about how he basically doesn't. He says we don't want to work with Roger Goodell anymore, bro. Why is he talking about we don't want to work with Roger Goodell anymore as if he is Papa John's? Like, you don't work here anymore. Well, we don't want to work with Roger Goodell. Lucky for you, Roger Goodell has no reason to work with you. I doubt that Roger Goodell's even taking his phone calls at this point. It's a wrap for you, partner. You are done. You are done in this town. It is over for you. But I want everybody to stop, take a minute, inhale, exhale, and make sure you don't get this twisted. What do I mean by this, make sure you don't get this twisted? I tell you what I mean about don't get this twisted. You guys don't really think that people believing that Papa John is a racist is what got him out to paint, do you? Like, you don't really think that's what went down. I mean, if we're being honest, there were quite a few people who thought that Papa John was a racist already. Now, you could make the argument that what Papa John did was is that he stopped using code, where before he had been using the code, and now he decided to be a bit more explicit, and that kind of bothered people. But oh, no. Let me tell you the math that I've done. And I've talked to some people who know a couple more things, and they seem to agree with what I'm talking about. But I want you to think about this. How many people did you hear defend Papa John after he got caught? Like, after this thing came out about this, Gabe, did you hear a single person defend Papa John?
Nope.
I have a lot of experience in dealing with what happens when people say the N-word, right? Like, when white people get in trouble for saying the N-word, or they go down for saying the N-word. It rarely takes much time before somebody pops up and says something to the effect of, well, I say it all the time in rap. I don't understand why I can't say it. Gabe, you've heard that one before, right?
Indeed.
You didn't hear it once this time, did you?
Nope.
Not a single person. And guess what? Actually, I have heard one person who has had a defense for Papa John in this. You know who that one person is? Me. That's who. Not that I'm actually defending Papa John, but there is a difference between saying a word and calling somebody that. They are not the same thing. Papa John, on that call, as it was relayed, did not call anybody an N-word. He sounded really stupid, but he didn't call anybody an N-word. And that's why I don't think that this response, everybody backing off, like, now you backing off? What he's doing there isn't terribly different than a lot of the stuff he'd been doing previously using code. But now you're going to get him out of there? Uh-uh. This is the same thing as Donald Sterling. When they got Donald Sterling up out to paint for talking bad about Magic Johnson, and don't you think for a second that boiled down really to anything else. If he had said that stuff about Isaiah Thomas, he might have still been able to keep the team. All the things that he had done before, and nobody took the team away from Donald Sterling. This is the one that did him in. Now, part of it was that there was some pressure from players, but the other part of it was people don't like Donald Sterling. It was easy to get him out to paint for this because people don't like him. People don't like Papa John. Think about this for a second. Papa John is from Jeffersonville, Indiana. His name was on the Wall of Fame, and his name was on the basketball arena at the high school, which I'm assuming is a gym, but you know what I mean. They took his name off of both of those. That's his hometown. Hometown, they took his name off of that stuff. Now, look, I could be mistaken here about how Jeffersonville, Indiana gets down. I'm not going to cast any aspersions on how Jeffersonville, Indiana gets down. All I'm saying is, not a single person in your hometown stood up for you, right? Not a single person in your hometown tries to fight to keep your situation up. Gabe, I just Googled Jeffersonville, Indiana racism, like just to see what would come up. And the first thing is racist letter targets interracial Jeffersonville couple. That's what I've got. Like, that's what pops up when you make that search for that town. I'm just simply saying that to say that we're not necessarily dealing with Berkeley. Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah. Anytime that you put a general statement like that into a Google search and you get something back.
Yes.
That's usually an indicator of what type of, you know, spot you're dealing with.
Yeah, yeah. But we are not dealing with Berkeley, California. That's the only point that I'm making here. And they took his name off the wall. Right? This dude who's probably giving more money to more stuff all over the place, they took his name down. All these people that have taken his money, not a single one of them rode for him. They've all taken his name off this stuff. That tells me they just don't like him. Cause it would be so easy to defend him in this case. It would be so easy for this thing to blow over if they wanted it to blow over. Nah, some people wanted him out the paint and now he is gone. But ain't nobody about to con me with no grandstanding about what this means that's deeper or anything else. No, 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 no. The moral of the story is it doesn't matter how long your bread is. After a certain point, if people get tired of you and enough of them get tired of you and enough of them have a level of power, you're going to be up out of here. And I'll take a moment to remember about, you know, 6 to 9 months ago, Roger Goodell seemed wobbly, very, very wobbly, like they was about to get him out the paint. Papa John tried to pounce on that. You remember that? Well, Papa John said the problem with the NFL had was with leadership. Leadership. That was what the problem was. Papa John's homeboy is Jerry Jones, by the way. Roger won the fight with Jerry. Roger won his extension. Papa John is out the paint.
He thought he could take on Goodell.
He thought he was going to take on Raj. Hey, we say what we want about Raj. Raj is a survivor. Every time it looked like it might be bad, no. Raj is a survivor. I can't imagine how funny it was. You know what Roger Goodell's going to do? As soon as they get all of Papa's faces off of them boxes, Roger Goodell's not even going to order a Papa John's pizza. He's just going to order a Papa John's box, and he's going to hold up a picture of the box, and he's going to send it to Papa John via MMS messaging.
You come at the king, you best not miss.
And by the way, I've said this in other places, and I want to say it here so that everybody is on record, because I do think this is ultimately going to happen. It is a matter of time before Papa John's becomes Papa's. Like, they're going to have to get him, they're going to have to scrub him all the way off. It's just going to be Papa's. Or as somebody else suggested, perhaps a rotation of different Papa John's, including Papa John Witherspoon. Your pizza gotta coordinate. Yo, Gerard, you know your pop's got a mushroom belt and a mushroom pizza? Yes, I know! All right, guys, I know you love the suits that you've got in your closet, but are those suits made to measure? Because a made-to-measure suit is a totally different world from what you're getting off the rack. Once you go that way, you can't go back, and Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements. You get an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors, and you got all the options to personalize the details. Get that lapel that you want, the lining, the pockets, the buttons, even writing your own monogram. And here's how it goes. You visit a stylist at a showroom. They take your measurements personally, or you can measure yourself at home and shop online at Indochino.com. You choose the fabric inside and out. Choose your design customization. Submit your measurements with your choices, then relax while your suit's professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. Now, this week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com. You enter the code BOMANI at checkout. That's 50% off regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit, and shipping is free. It's Indochino.com. Promo code BOMANI for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. It's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, our first story of the day comes from the tech space.
This is Carrie Flynn, marketing reporter at Digiday. Do you use Twitter? Did you lose followers last week? Pop star Katy Perry did. Her following on Twitter went from 110 million to 108 million. Okay, yeah, it's still a massive following, but that's 2 million quote-unquote people that just disappeared from her following list after the so-called Twitter purge. But that's not necessarily a bad thing for Katy Perry or for anyone else on Twitter, according to marketing executives I spoke with. In fact, they're quite happy. The 2 million accounts that disappeared from Katy Perry's list were flagged by Twitter as potential spam or simply inactive accounts. They're originally locked from tweeting and therefore aren't counted as active users anyway. Darnell Briscoe, a VP at entertainment company Fullscreen, said the Twitter purge, quote, forces the issue of continuing to move away from vanity metrics on things like follower accounts, the things that actually matter, meaningful engagement and sentiment. Twitter has long had a problem with bots and other fake accounts. This is just the latest step to clean up the network and make it a better tool for marketers and for anyone. It comes after a ton of backlash, including the chief marketing officer of Unilever speaking out against the platforms for allowing fraudulent practices in influencer marketing. But there's still a lot of work to be done. Fake accounts on Twitter are still abundant. They're easy to create, and bad actors can use them to inflate movements and spread false news. They're also rampant on other social networks, like Instagram. Marketers said they want more platforms to do more work to remove fake accounts from apps so that app buyers aren't buying fake engagement and so that the network is just a better place for every real person online.
So here's my thing. Now, I have 450,000 followers, or 449,000, I think it is now. Gabe, I didn't really lose any. And that makes me wonder how good this purge actually was, because there's a lot of people following me who clearly need to be purged off this bad boy.
Well, it just means that you're respected, man. The people who follow you aren't following you for a particular type of reason. No, they're following you because they're actually interested in what you have to say.
But I got so many bots and stuff that do follow me, and I deal with so much poisonous, toxic stuff from people that I'm wondering just how effective this actually was. So when they're talking about, oh, well, these are accounts that weren't tweeting anyway, or da-da-da, then what you're doing is nothing, if that's what it is. If you're talking about that all these were just inactive accounts, that's not the problem people have with Twitter. The problem people have with Twitter are these accounts that are out here harassing people. Now, if you want to clean up the follower accounts and get the people who have been buying followers and stuff like that, that's cool for your numbers, but that doesn't do anything to improve anybody's, like, user experience. Like, hey, man, I got to be real with y'all. I mean, and people around me, you may have noticed this. I've basically spent the last 3 weeks not sending personal tweets or anything that wasn't specifically related to work because I got tired of dealing with all the other nonsense. Those are the kinds of things that you got to figure out how to fix, not just tightening up the follower count. Now, for me personally, I don't know how anybody else had approached this, but for me, I never thought that the actual follower count mattered. Like, all that mattered was the people that you were actually engaging with. Like, I always felt like my follower count was better than most people's. Like, the number could be lower, but it was stronger than others because of the level of engagement. I don't see how anybody couldn't have noticed that one already. But if people had really just been using the counting stat on followers, then yeah, maybe this helps cutting that out of there, I guess. But I don't know if the purge got what it is that I want to see purged.
I just have to say that I didn't lose any followers.
That's good to know. They all love you, man.
Our second story comes from music.
This is Bonnie Sternberg with Glamour. There are going to be plenty of people who don't understand Ariana Grande's just dropped God is a Woman video, and not because they don't know what to make of those screaming gophers that pop up halfway through. They won't understand it because they don't understand Ariana Grande or anyone else who doesn't fit neatly into their antiquated mold of what a woman should be. They give us two options, virgin or whore, and that dichotomy can be a difficult one to defy when you're a former child star. But Grande, who has always been an outspoken feminist and refused to be defined by her sexuality, rejects the notion that women can only be one thing, that feminine sensuality and divinity can't go hand in hand. Some of it is easy to decipher, like the all-female creation of Michelangelo's The Creation of Adam that closes the video, or the Mother Earth imagery when Grande descends a mountain and strokes her growing animated belly like some sort of fertility goddess. The video's most striking image, however, features a spoken word assist from none other than Madonna, with Grande mouthing the pop icon's reading of Ezekiel 25:17, the verse made famous by Samuel Jackson in Pulp Fiction, replacing brothers with sisters. She then flings an oversized gavel and shatters a literal glass ceiling, revealing an enormous pair of outstretched female legs. Grande tweeted a clip of the scene, writing, "To my fellow goddesses who work their asses off every day to break the glass ceiling, this is for you. Hope this can be your anthem." God is a Woman is an anthem. For female sexuality, for knowing what you want and not being afraid to ask for it, for knowing your own worth, for recognizing that women can be powerful and spiritual and horny and whatever the hell else they want to be, all at once. At one point in the video, Grande sits unbothered as small men hurl words like fake and annoying at her. They bounce right off of her and she doesn't even look at them. And that alone is enough to make God is a Woman an anthem worth worshiping.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I am here for it. By the way, Gabe, before I forget, that thing about the Ezekiel verse in Pulp Fiction, that's where the path of righteous man is beset on all sides by the tyranny of evil men. Is that one?
I believe so.
You will know my name is the Lord when I lay my fingers upon thee. It's the longest Bible verse I can recite. The other one I can recite, Jesus wept. The Madonna part got me because I don't feel like the Like a Prayer stuff was like directly analogous to what we're talking about here. But of course, you know, there was all the stigmata stuff that was in, well, I guess you wouldn't know, Gabe, because you probably weren't alive. But there were all those things that went there. Like that would be a logical person for reading a verse in this way. I just find myself amazed that we are still having this argument about the like Madonna whore complex with women that is still there. And the reason that I am so amazed that that complex still remains and people still have arguments about it is, dog, y'all are hustling backwards. Like if you just give a simple demonstration that you're willing to allow a woman to be the person that she is, do you realize the level of respect that people have for you when you just allow them to live? It works out a lot better probably for whatever it is that you are hoping for or looking for. It probably will. People still play this game. Now, that game even knows, is there like a controversy around this video or is it just like making think pieces?
In all the research that I did to, you know, get someone to join the show with us, it seemed like there were just a lot of positivity around it, a lot of positive think pieces.
Well, that's good. I mean, on that level, I just, I don't know, it's wild. I mean, I guess I sound like almost that naive person. It's like, I can't believe there's still racism in this day. But, I mean, dude, I'm just saying, y'all doing this wrong. Y'all doing this all the way wrong. And the biggest, I mean, like the obvious way for doing it wrong is just in the general sense of not allowing people to be who they want to be. But if you are a cynic and just wildly self-interested, you are still doing this wrong.
Our last story of the day also comes from tech.
I'm Washington Post tech columnist Jeffrey Fowler, and I've got some bad news. Your passwords have probably already been stolen by hackers. Don't believe me? Visit a website called haveibeenpwned.com. That's pwned spelled P-W-N-E-D. Type in your email address or your favorite password, and it'll show you if they've already shown up on the dark web after one of the ever-growing number of hacking attacks. So far, that site has collected 5 billion, yes, billion accounts, so chances are pretty high that one of yours is there. So, other than freak out, what are you supposed to do about this? In my Washington Post column, I argue there's one thing everyone should do to keep themselves safer online, and that is to get a password manager. A password manager is an app on your computer and phone that keeps all your passwords in one digital safe, so you can stop reusing the same password everywhere. Hackers love it when we reuse passwords, because when they break into one site and steal a bunch of passwords, they then go and try them on lots of other sites. That's how they get you. Your best defense is using a different password everywhere. That's just hard to do when we have hundreds of sites and apps and only limited human brains. So, this is where the password manager comes in. To make all those different passwords available and in sync on your computer, your phone, your tablet, whatever. In my post column, I recommend one called Dashlane, but there are others that also work well, including 1Password and LastPass. You might wonder, is it safe to put all your passwords in one place? The short answer is, with a password manager, your passwords are stored behind a master password that only you know. It never goes over the internet, and not even the password manager company knows it. So don't forget it. These companies have done some really smart things to keep our password troves safe and have a pretty good track record. And it's definitely better than whatever you're doing now with sticky notes, a notebook, or a Word doc to remember your passwords. So take the plunge and get a password manager. It's a little bit of a chore, but I promise it won't be nearly as much work as, say, cleaning out the garage or something like that.
I just want to leave the internet and never come back.
Have you done this? Have you put your email into that website?
Sounds like I know I'll be caught. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've done some password rotation on stuff.
I just checked just now. I have been pwned.
I feel pretty confident that I have, and I'm so scared. I spend so much time, like, trying to, like, split these things up and everything else. I try. I figure, like, on some of these, it's like, you can have that password. You know what I mean? Pwned on 2 breach sites.
Oh boy. They've got us. They've got us, Bomani.
How so?
We're in trouble, man.
I know. Two-step. That's all I got. I'm Captain Two-Step. I go through all the hassles now of all that stuff. But do you two-step?
I don't.
You should
maybe
start two-stepping.
Maybe that's a problem.
Start two-stepping. Two-step will help. I hope. We should talk to the people now because I'm nervous.
Beep. Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, so last week when we were trying to figure out what question we should put out there for our listener-generated voicemails, we decided to ask the people, who are these Stay Ready All-Stars in your life? Who are they? We'd like to know.
So, yes, indeed.
We got some good ones, but it kind of seems like everybody has their own definition of what a Stay Ready All-Star is. And not everybody gave their name and where they were from, so I'll just play our first one here.
Hey guys, this is a response to the Stay Ready friend. When I was in college, I once got too intoxicated at a party and fell through a window and broke it. And the next morning, I went back to apologize, and some of my friends decided to come with me, and my one friend, Lou, didn't really understand that we were going back to apologize. He thought we were going back to fight, and then tried to start a fight when we got back, and that made it harder for me to apologize and try to give them, you know, money for the window. Hope you guys like the story. Love the show.
I do like that. Like, you're trying to go apologize, lose, like, we don't apologize. It's not what we do. It's not how we get down.
Just like asking your friend to join you, and that's immediately what comes to his mind. All right, so we're throwing down.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what's happening.
Like, I had a friend one time, I called somebody and got my ex-girlfriend for some money, and I needed some backup to go get the money. And I called him, I was like, hey, man, I need some help. Gotta go talk to this dude about something. He's like, don't tell me nothing more. Just come pick me up in his own. He was not coming to negotiate.
All right, here's our second.
Hey, Bo, JD from Missouri. Just calling in to tell you about one of my Stay Ready All-Stars. So I came down to this school in Missouri, and I met up with a teammate of mine on the basketball team. And quickly, we learned that he was a former boxer. Fast forward a couple months, I'm walking back from the weight room and going through, you know, the student commons area where everybody meet up at. I open the door, and there's pretty much a circle group of football guys, and I look up, and my homeboy Marino was the guy that was a former boxer basketball player, was squared up with a dude. And I'm instantly like, oh, yeah, this is going to be good. Because I have seen guys with hands, like certified hands, put hands on people before. So they squaring up, they circling. My man went to make a move. He dipped and hit my man with the cleanest two-piece ever. And my man, the football player, looked up, looked at him, and just walked out and decided, you know what? That's enough of me. That's what I call a Stay Ready All-Star.
Dude, that is so real. I talked to a guy who played college football once, and he said he boxed, except he realized he was too close to the Mendoza line, right? Like, he was like, 500 is not an appropriate record for a boxer. And so he had enough of boxing. And so I remember I asked him, I was like, all right, so, like, after doing a little boxing, I was like, so how good are you? He's like, look, I ain't got nothing for, like, an actual boxer. But if you do not have any training in fighting, there is nothing you can do with me. Like, just a little boxing training did enough of that. Anytime somebody says, I used to box, and not that I work, you know, I do kickboxing at the gym. I'm talking about somebody that used to box where, you know, they getting hit in the jaw. You don't want none of them problems. Trust me.
Yeah, I mean, for all those kids that do, like, taekwondo or something, you know, when they're a kid, you don't want nothing.
Let me tell you, the biggest reason not to be out here picking on kids in school, man, I don't know if they, you know, people still putting their kids in it like they did in the 80s and 90s, man, but you don't know who out here know that kung fu. I told you about my homeboy Jamal. Like, you probably see Jamal. Jamal probably listening to this right now. He's heard me tell the story many times. You probably think Jamal was a nerd, right? Jamal got really thick glasses, you know, all that stuff. He's into, like, more intellectual pursuits and stuff like this. Jamal's some, like, nth degree black belt in the taekwondo. So one time I was out with him and a bunch of his partners, and they were on the fencing team at North Carolina, you know, sword fighting. And one of those dudes who looked to be a bit, you know, nerdy himself. And I just remember I heard him. He was like, yeah, that Navy SEAL workout, I'm never doing that again. I was like, what you mean again? Like, you did it the first time? Man, that merry band of nerds would stomp you out. Like, if you be like, you go pull three Crips at random and give me these three nerds, I got my money on these three nerds.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you never know about people, right? You don't, because you don't know them at all, right? So, I mean, the dearly departed Anthony Bourdain, may he rest in peace, was like an avid Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy.
You never know.
So it's like you mess with him at a bar, you're getting taken down to the ground.
Yep, you never know.
Arm bar.
Never know. Imagine that, because judo, not a lot of people put their kids in judo, but that has to be most disheartening. Like, yo, why am I wrapped up and I can't move?
at some country bar out in the middle of nowhere, thinking you're going to take some dude out, and then next thing you know, you're on the ground and you're in a chokehold. How did I end up here?
And the dude's telling you, don't move. You're like, I can't move. I can't breathe. What is this?
Well, our last of the day combines a couple of different questions that we've put out there, so it's kind of interesting.
Hey, Bomani, this is Pete in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, and I called about your Stay Ready All-Stars in your life. And my Stay Ready All-Star is my dad. I'm 38 years old, and when I graduated high school 20 years ago, I was being cute with my dad, and we were sort of roughhousing a little bit, and I decided to go after him a little bit just to show him how much of a man I was since I graduated high school. And he hit tossed me over, you know, his hip, and I landed on the ground in the living room, and he put his elbow right in my chest, and he goes, "Who's your dad?" And ever since then, I've really sort of kept my distance from him from that. So it was pretty fun, but enjoy the show.
I feel like being a Stay Ready All, like being a dad makes you, like, at the very least, like an honorary captain. Like, you got an honorary degree from Stay Ready University. Yeah, you might not be ready anywhere else in the world, but you're ready at that house.
Can you define for the listeners what a Stay Ready All-Star is?
Simple, man. You don't have to get ready if you stay ready. Like, there's some people that take them a brief moment to figure out that the fight has started, and then it might be too late. Not Stay Ready All-Star. He's ready for the fight no matter what happens. Anywhere you go, he's ready for this thing to jump off. Just always ready. Always prepared. That's what it's got to be sometimes, man. You need one of those in the crew. What you don't need, though, like, you want to Stay Ready All-Star, but I'm trying to figure out the distinction. But, like, my man talking about his buddy Lou. You don't want Lou where you going to break the peace and he only knows how to fight. You don't need that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing two times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thanks to our new sponsor, Indochino. Thanks to Carrie Flynn of DigiDay. Check out the story on Twitter, Cutting Out the Bots. Thank you to Bonnie Sternberg of Glamour. Check out her story about Ariana Grande's new video. And thank you to Jeffrey Fowler of The Washington Post. Check out his story on password theft. Also, don't forget The Right Time Book Club. We're going to go through chapters 5 through 8 of Friday Night Night Lights on July 31st, chapters 5 through 8. So get yourself ready for that one. We will talk to you guys, I guess, in a couple of days. We got a pretty cool interview that I think you will enjoy. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.